Buried deep in the middle of the Shulchan Aruch, Judaism's code of law, is perhaps the singular hardest law to properly fulfill. The halacha in Orach Chaim Reish Chaf Beis states that one is obligated to bless Hashem for the bad that occurs in one's life just as one would bless Hashem for the good. The Shulchan Aruch is obligating us to thank Hashem for the tragedies and the hardships that befall us with the same degree of appreciation and love as one thanks Hashem for the good. The question is, how is anyone possessing a functioning human heart able to properly pull this off? How is it expected of a parent who just lost a child to look up to heaven and thank Hashem? How is it expected of a man who just broke his collarbone to thank Hashem the same way he would thank Hashem the night he married off his youngest daughter? Where do we contain this ability? Which mental exercises could possibly train us to perform such Herculean emotional feats? Also, aren't we accustomed to thanking Hashem for the good and praying for the bad to change? Why are we thanking Hashem for the bad? Isn't bad bad? I believe this parsha contains the answer. The Jews, after wandering the desert for close to four decades, turned to Moshe and cried, "We want cucumbers, we want leeks, we want garlic." So intensely lusting these foods, they began talking nostalgically of their life in Egypt. Now think about that for a moment. It borders on insanity. The Egyptian bondage was one of the darkest moments in our pretty long history, containing a lot of dark moments, and yet these Jews, with their apparently selective memory, longed for Egypt's juicy cucumbers and aromatic leeks and garlic. It's almost unbelievable. But aside for the ludicrousness these Jews were displaying with their deep nostalgia of the Egyptian culinary scene, they were also completely wrong in their very desires. Rashi cites the Sifri, which writes that the man, the miraculous food which rained down upon the Jews every day from heaven, had the extraordinary ability to taste like whatever the eater desired. You wanted mint, it tasted like mint. You wanted a pina colada, it tasted like a pina colada. You wanted a pumpkin pie, it tasted like a pumpkin pie. All flavors of the world were embedded into the man. All except five: leeks, melons, cucumbers, onions, and garlic. Now, why would the man turn into every flavor except these? So the Sifri explains that these five flavors were detrimental to nursing mothers and could potentially hinder an infant's milk intake. Therefore, Hashem extracted these five flavors from the man in order to prevent the harm of newborns. So not only did these Jews complain, they were complaining about a perceived negative that was in actuality there completely for their own benefit. This episode is a model for all seemingly troubling occurrences that befall all of us. The Torah is teaching us that there is no such thing as a bad occurrence from Hashem. Toiv Hashem lakol, it says in Tehillim. Every single thing Hashem does is good. Bad is merely goodness in a different form. It is goodness that we can't necessarily understand. Like a two-year-old who doesn't understand why he has to sleep every night in a cage with bars that go up over his head, completely unaware that the crib is purely there to protect him. So to all of us, all that befalls us is entirely, whether we understand it or not, for our best. Hashem did not create the world in order to have servants working for him. He doesn't need our prayers or our service. Hashem is perfect with or without people singing his praises and giving their thanks. Hashem created the world for one reason and one reason only: to give good to us. So much like a father and mother who would never dream of doing a single detrimental thing towards their child, so is Hashem towards us. Like parents who can go their entire lifetime without deliberately doing a single act that was bad for their child, so too Hashem showers us with nothing but goodness. Now, a child may have looked at his parents with confused eyes as the doctor stuck a needle in his arm. He may have looked at his parents with sadness as the bus to camp pulled away and he was wondering why in the world they sent him to this scary and lonely place. He may not have seen the good in what they were doing, but good it certainly was. Hashem loves each and every one of us infinitely more than we love our own children. The perfection of the world is demonstrative of that. Every single natural God-made edible food in the entire world is healthy and good for you. There is not a natural, divinely created fruit, vegetable, bean, nut, or grain which is meant for human consumption that is bad for you. Unlike donuts or Mike and Ike's or a can of Red Bull, fresh, natural foods are by definition good for you. Why is that? Plain and simple. Because Hashem made them. Hashem is in the business of dispensing good. Creating edible foods that are harmful to the body is the antithesis of his goal. Therefore, the natural world is only filled with food that is beneficial to your body. Or take the human body, for example. There is not a bodily function that the human body goes through that is naturally and inherently painful. Other than childbirth, which the Torah explicitly says will be painful as an atonement for the sin of Chava, of Eve, there is not a single function our bodies perform that is painful. We breathe, sleep, digest, pump, and filter blood. Millions of cells are splitting every second. Valves are opening and closing. Neurons are racing to and fro. Every single one of these processes is painless. A healthy and well-kept body runs seamlessly. Why? Because Hashem made it. And if he makes something, it can only be good. That's the only thing he wants for us. The Jews in the desert had millions of reasons to thank Hashem for all the good in their lives, and yet they picked five tiny issues to harp on, pathetically unaware that even those five were for their benefit. We all make this mistake. Each and every one of us has hundreds of thousands of reasons to be grateful to Hashem, and yet we often find ourselves harping on the three things in our lives that don't appear to our limited, puny, hugely restricted understanding to be going the right way. How refreshing it is to be reminded that not only are those things not bad, they are precisely what will give us even more good. The Torah is replete with examples of this. The Jews in Egypt were fishermen. The Ramban says this in Shemos Yud Aleph Hey. Their diet and income heavily relied on fish. Can you imagine the pain they must have felt when the Nile turned to blood, killing all the fish? Their business collapsed. Their food source shriveled up. Where are they to go now? Lo and behold, what happened a mere day later? The Egyptians, in desperate need of water, began buying water from the Jews at exorbitant prices. Precisely the source of the Jews' agony was in fact making them fabulously wealthy. Another example. Young Moshe once found himself sitting on Paro's lap. Suspicious of a budding rebellious son who would dethrone his adoptive father, Paro decided to perform a test to determine if it was true. He placed a crown as well as a glowing hot coal in front of Moshe. If Moshe reached for the crown, implying his desire to overtake the empire, he would be killed. If he reached for the coals, on the other hand, it meant he was merely a baby attracted to shiny, glistening objects. Moshe was about to reach for the crown when an angel came out of nowhere and pushed his arm into the coals, instantly burning Moshe's hand and subsequently his mouth, giving him a speech impediment that would last his entire lifetime. And yet, was the burning coal bad? Precisely the item that was perceived as bad was the object saving Moshe's life. In our lives, too, there is only one thing. It's called goodness. Sometimes it comes in the form of health, happiness, and birthday cakes. Other times it comes far more disguised. It may come as a fire that burns someone's house down. Seems bad. Perhaps it's a catalyst to free the occupants of their over-attachment to materialism and prompt them to appreciate the less tangible things in life. Sometimes goodness comes in the form of losing a job, perhaps that company will go bankrupt in a few months, and Hashem is delivering a prod to go elsewhere. Hashem's credibility has been established long ago as the ultimate dispenser of goodness to humanity. How hugely small-minded to think that the issue we are dealing with, he somehow forgot about. Someone once debated the Chavos Yair, Reb Yair Chaim Bachrach, one of the 17th century's most prominent rabbis, and asked him the following question. How could it be that all the segulos, the mystical healing formulas found in the Gemara work, if they make no sense according to modern knowledge of medicine? The Chavos Yair looked at the man with a smile and replied, "He who can make a 300-foot oak tree come out of an acorn can make those segulos work." Hashem runs the world with unfathomable wisdom and sophistication. How refreshing it is to remember that He is doing it all for our own good. We might not get it, but we know it's true. Reb Meilich Biederman relates the following amazing story. Reb Shlomo Halberstam of Bubov, in an attempt to evade the Nazis, ran to take refuge in the city of Lemberg. Not only after he and his family arrived in the city, not long afterwards, news spread that the Nazis were a frightening 2 days away. Scrambling desperately to save themselves, the Jews of the city reached out to all the ambassadors and begged them to grant visas. The only one that agreed was the ambassador to Costa Rica. Anyone who brought a large enough sum of money to the office of the Costa Rican ambassador was granted a visa. Huge lines began forming outside his door. Reb Shlomo hurried to gather the money to purchase visas for his whole family. He finally got the money and ran to join the line in front of the ambassador's house. Suddenly, the door to the ambassador's house closed. A cold voice rang out through the window. "The ambassador is no longer issuing visas. All those still standing online must go home." Picture the horror. Where should they go? What should they do? The Nazis were closing in. Was this the end? Clutching the useless sack of money, Reb Shlomo began walking home. Sorry to return home without the coveted visas, he decided to stop off at a nearby shul. Delaying the inevitable, he sat down on a bench and picked up the nearest sefer. He looked up to heaven as he flipped to a random page and cried, "Hashem, I need chizik, give me some divine inspiration." The book he held was called Teferis Uziel and was a commentary on Tehillim. The very page he turned to was a quote from the Shla, Rabbi Yeshayo Horowitz, a Polish rabbi and Kabbalist who lived in the 1500s, which stated the following, that when King David said, "Va'ani svilasi lecho Hashem eis rotzon eloikim b'roiv chazdecha aneni be'emes yishecha," his request of Hashem was, "If what I am asking for is good for me, then answer my prayers. But if what I want is in actuality bad for me, then don't answer them." The Shla explains that we don't actually know what's good for us. We can only guess. David was asking of Hashem, "Only if it is good for me should you grant me my request. But if what I want is actually bad, then don't." So inspired, Reb Shlomo picked himself up and walked home. Less than 1 hour later, terror broke out. German troops rode into the center of town and caught wind that an ambassador had been writing visas for the Jews. The Nazis swiftly obtained the list of recipients of those visas and began combing the streets for those people. As the Halberstam family quickly packed their things and got ready to run, all the people who had been online in front of Reb Shlomo hours prior were gathered like cattle into the middle of the street. The Nazis lit a fire and stripped all the Jews of their clothing as the fire got bigger. Reb Shlomo scanned the surrounding area and found a place to hide. A place to escape, a hole in the fence, a path through the woods. As those Jews were being led to their gruesome deaths, Reb Shlomo, the man who didn't get a visa, was escaping. By the time the Jews in the town square met their deaths and the Nazis turned their attention to the rest of the city, Reb Shlomo was long gone. The visa that he didn't get was his ticket to survival. In Tehillim Tzadi, it says that the average lifespan of man is 70 years. Yemei shenoseinu bohem shivim shana, There are 24 hours in a day. Multiply that by 365 days and you get a total of 8,760 hours in a year. Multiply that by 70 years and you get the golden number 613,000 hours in a lifespan. You heard that correctly. There are 613,000 hours in the lifespan of an average man. Coincidence? I doubt it. For Hashem and His Torah are hovering over our every hour of our every day, ensuring the quality of our life is at its highest. Throughout the hardships of our lives, this seemingly difficult halacha in Shulchan Aruch has been our one and only consolation. We clutch close to the mantra of Gamzu L'Toiva. We hold tight to the idea that no matter where and no matter when, Hashem is always giving goodness to us. We scream it out when we understand it the least. We look up and cry, a piercing cry, Gamzu L'Toiva. It's been our way of life for thousands of years. From the woman who is told that her child has no heartbeat, to the 50-year-old man who is diagnosed with lung cancer. From the parents who get a call that their child was kicked out of yeshiva, to the young couple who learns that their child has Down syndrome. From the 27-year-old girl who hasn't gotten a date in 3 full years, to the 33-year-old boy who just got a no from his 100th girl. From the investor who lost his life savings in a failed stock, to the person who just got the news that they have ALS. We look up to the sky while shedding a tear, and through gritted teeth, we belt out Gamzu L'Toiva. We look back down and we wipe away our tears and are overcome by calm. For we may not always understand it, but we are oh so sure that one way or another, it's the truth. Kol man de'avid rachmana, letav avid.